And now, for our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter, narrated by Ken Jackson, with performances by James Konacek, Bobby Aselford, Michael Replogle, Margie Tompros, Christopher Graybill, Karen Novak, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Dylan Lynch, Stephen Carpenter, Jeff Allen, Tony Nam, Johan Detweiler, Andy Clements, Jeff Baker, Mort Shelby, Rick Rowan, Jonathan Watkins, and Christopher Sheeran. The Last Gunfighter, number 19, Slaughter.
Frank Morgan eased back on the reins and brought the big golden-hued stallion he was riding to a halt. Behind him, the two horses he was leading came to a stop as well. The big wolf-like cur that had been loping along beside bounded on ahead, though, darting into the brush in pursuit of some small animal Frank hadn't seen. Frank had reined in at the top of a long, twisting ridge that overlooked a broad plain. Behind him was an even broader valley. In the distance, to the south and southwest, he saw flashes of blue that he knew came from the Pacific Ocean.
That's it. That's where we're headed, Goldie. Los Angeles.
Frank had been there numerous times over the years, beginning when he was a relatively young man and the settlement was little more than a sun-baked pueblo. Now Frank was a man in advanced middle age, and Los Angeles was a real town. No, more than that, he reflected. It was a city. Streets that looked like a maze crisscrossed the valley in front of him. They were lined with houses and with brick business buildings, some of them several stories tall. Buildings weren't the only things that had sprouted since Frank was here last. Tall wooden structures jutted up in scores of locations scattered all over the city. They were oil well derricks, and Frank had seen numerous others as he crossed the San Fernando Valley. Nor were oil wells the only thing multiplying around here. Had to be thousands of people living down there, Frank reflected, as he thumbed back the wide-brimmed, high-crowned Stetson he wore. No, more likely tens of thousands, he amended. Just thinking about it was enough to give a man who didn't like crowds second thoughts. Luckily, Frank was the sort of man who was comfortable wherever he went. From big cities like Chicago and San Francisco and Denver, to small frontier settlements such as Buckskin, Nevada, the place he had left a week earlier. Not that Buckskin was all that small anymore, he reminded himself. It had gone from being a ghost town the first time he saw it to a regular boom town as the old silver mines located nearby began to produce again. Frank had spent a pleasant, if somewhat hectic, time as the marshal of Buckskin before coming to the realization that it was time for him to move on again. Years before, someone had dubbed him the Drifter, and the name fit. He'd been fiddle-footed too long to settle down permanent-like. Besides, the good folks of Buckskin deserved a marshal who didn't have bloodthirsty varmints trying to kill him all the time. A rangy, muscular man with a face a little too rugged to be called handsome and dark hair shot through with strands of silver, Frank Morgan had been roaming the West for most of the 30 years or so since the end of the Civil War. He had first made his name as a fast gun in his home state of Texas, and that reputation had followed him ever since, no matter where he drifted. The days of the Wild West were fading now, as the century waned and a new century loomed in only a few more years. The sprawling, modern city that was Los Angeles was proof of that. It had changed a great deal from the raw frontier settlement it had once been. From time to time, Frank Morgan had tried to change too, but he'd never been successful at it. He was still the same man he'd always been, a gunfighter. According to some, the last gunfighter. Frank lifted the reins and hitched his horse into motion and turned to the rangy gray stallion he was leading along with a pack horse.
Come on, Stormy. Hey, Wolf, we're leaving.
The big cur, known as Wolf, emerged from the brush, licking his chops over the critter he'd just dined on. Some unlucky rabbit, Frank thought. Wolf fell in alongside Frank and Goldie again as they began making their way down the ridge. The sure-footed Goldie picked his way along the trail with ease. Frank had come to Los Angeles on business of a sort. No one looking at this rugged rider in worn trail clothes would take him for a rich man, but in truth, Frank had enough wealth to rival all but the biggest mining magnates and railroad tycoons. He had inherited a portion of the vast Browning financial empire from his late wife Vivian. Being rich had never interested him all that much, though. As long as Frank had enough money for supplies and ammunition as he roamed, he was happy. So he had several firms of lawyers in Denver and San Francisco who managed his holdings for him. He was here in Los Angeles as a favor to one of those attorneys, Claudius Turnbuckle. Turnbuckle had come to Buckskin to help him out there. And when the lawyer had asked Frank to ride down to Los Angeles, since he was leaving Buckskin anyway, Frank had agreed. It seemed that Turnbuckle's law partner, a man named John J. Stafford, had traveled from San Francisco to Southern California to handle a case for one of the firm's clients, and he had run into considerable trouble there. The sort of trouble that Frank Morgan was uniquely suited to handle. Gun trouble. Frank had the name of the hotel where Stafford was staying. That was all he really knew. The lawyer was expecting him, though, and would fill him in on everything when they met. Frank intended to reserve judgment until then about what he would do. Despite the reputation he had, especially among nervous lawmen who didn't want shootouts on the streets of their towns, Frank had never hired out his gun. He sometimes helped out folks who needed his help, that was all. His other killings had been strictly in self-defense. He always tried to turn away the ambitious young gunnies who came after him, looking to make a name for themselves. His efforts were seldom successful, though, and then Frank was forced to slap leather to save his own life. Because even though he didn't want to kill anybody, he wanted to die even less. That was just common sense. The residential streets on the outskirts of town were wide and dusty. As Frank rode along them leading the two horses, a couple of kids wearing short pants and caps left off playing some sort of game and started trotting along beside him.
Damn! That's a big hat. He must be a cowboy.
Hey, mister, are you a cowboy?
I done some cowboying in my time. Used to work on a ranch in Texas when I was a youngster my own self.
Look at his gun! You ever shoot anybody with it, mister?
Every now and then. But only when I have to.
Are you Wild Bill Hickok?
I'm afraid not. Bill Hickok's been dead almost 20 years, I'm sad to say.
Was he a friend of yours?
Not really. I met the man a time or two. I wouldn't say we were friends.
Wow. You knew Wild Bill Hickok? What about Wyatt Earp?
Him and his brothers. Doc Holliday, too.
Were you in Tombstone for the big gunfight there?
Nope, I missed that one.
Have you ever been in a big gunfight?
Probably not any you've heard of.
Aw, he ain't a real gunfighter. He probably ain't even from Texas. Hey, mister, is that a dog or a wolf?
He's a dog. He might have a little wolf in him, though.
Can we play with him?
Wouldn't be a good idea. He's not a real playful sort.
We see coyotes sometimes. They come down out of the hills. Mostly they stay away from folks, though.
So I've heard.
Did you come here to kill somebody? I told you he ain't a real gunfighter. Ow, what'd you do that for? 'Cause it felt like it.
A second later, the two youngsters were rolling around in the dusty street wrestling. Frank grinned, shook his head, and rode on. The houses were being replaced by businesses now. Frank had spotted a squat, thick-walled adobe building with a sign over its open door that read Cantina. He wasn't much of a drinker, but he had been on the trail long enough so that a cool beer to cut the dust in his throat sounded pretty good. He angled Goldie toward the building, stopped at the hitch rail in front of it, and tied the horses to it.
Stay, Wolf.
Frank went inside, grateful for the cool dimness after being in the blazing California sun. The place wasn't very busy. A couple of men stood drinking at the bar. Only one of the tables was occupied. The lone man who sat there lazily dealt himself a solitaire hand. He looked like a professional gambler, but his threadbare suit and old hat had seen better days. Frank moved to the bar and hailed the chunky Mexican bartender.
A beer, please.
Si, senor.
He left a good space between himself and the two other drinkers, who were dressed like cowboys.
That's that gunfighter Morgan, I tell you.
When Frank glanced over, he saw one of them nudging the other in the ribs with an elbow. They both looked at him and then looked away. That hadn't taken long. Not long at all. Now that he'd been recognized, Frank's hope was that the two waddies down the bar would just want to talk to him and hear about any gunfights he'd been involved in, like those youngsters outside. The worst thing would be if one or both of those hombres fancied themselves fast on the draw and eager to prove it by bracing a known gunfighter, especially one as famous as Frank Morgan. It was out of his hands now, so Frank sipped the beer the bartender set in front of him and waited to see what was going to happen.
Hey, mister. My amigo here claims that you're Frank Morgan, the fellow they call the Drifter. Is that right?
I'm Morgan.
Told you. Told you I seen his picture on books.
I hear that you're a famous gunfighter, Mr. Morgan. I'd be plumb honored if you let me buy you a drink.
I'm much obliged, boys. But I'm not much of a drinking man. This one will do me just fine. And then I have to be moving on. I just stopped for a minute to wet my whistle.
Well, that's not very friendly of you.
I didn't stop to make friends.
Come on, Lonnie. You don't want to horn in where you ain't wanted.
Listen, Mr. High and Mighty Morgan. All I wanted to do was to buy you a drink.
I said I was obliged.
You know why I wanted to buy you a drink?
Just being friendly, I suppose.
I figured it'd be a nice thing to do, buying one last drink for the man I was about to kill.
I'm not looking for trouble. I've had my drink and now I'll move on.
You're not going anywhere, Morgan. Not until you and me have it out.
I got nothing against you, kid. And you got no reason to draw on me.
No reason? How about to show Barclay here and old Pedro that I'm faster than you?
Don't kill anybody on my account. I'm not even really paying attention.
Please, Signor Lonnie, no shooting. The floor here is dirt, so she cleans up easy, but it's no good for business when people get killed in my cantina.
Shut up! This old man insulted me.
Now, how'd I do that? By not taking that drink you wanted to buy for me?
By thinking that you're faster than me. I can't let you get away with that. I'm the fastest draw around here, and I'm gonna prove it.
Frank started turning toward Lonnie, still holding the empty beer mug in his left hand. Without warning, he smashed the mug against the right side of Lonnie's head and knocked the young cowboy's hat flying. Lonnie's knees unhinged. He crumpled to the hard-packed dirt floor.
Hey!
His friend took a fast step back. The young cowboy's hand dropped to the butt of his gun in what appeared to be a purely instinctive move. He froze with his fingers wrapped around the Colt's walnut grips because Frank's .45 was already out and leveled.
Don't draw, son.
Don't shoot, Mr. Morgan. I ain't touching my gun now. See?
I don't intend to if I don't have to. What's your name?
Jeff, Mr. Morgan.
Well now, Jeff, I'm gonna walk out of here, get on my horse, and go about my business. Is that all right with you?
Oh, yes, sir.
When I'm gone, you might want to help your friend up and take him back to whatever spread you boys work for. I didn't want to hurt him at all, but I figured an aching head was better than a bullet in the brisket.
Yes, sir. I never even saw you draw, Mr. Morgan. It was like the gun was just there in your hand without you having to do a thing.
You tell Lonnie that when he wakes up. All right if I holster my gun. You don't want to try your luck, too.
Oh, no, sir.
I'm sorry about busting that mug. I'll pay for it.
No need, senor. I'd rather have to pick up busted glass than to have to haul out some young fool's ventilated carcass.
I insist. For your trouble, amigo.
Hey, if you insist.
Tell Lonnie I'm sorry I had to knock him out.
I'm surprised you didn't kill that young fool. I was ready to hit the floor in case any wild shots started flying.
There wouldn't have been any wild shots.
No, probably not. You have the look of a man who's weary of killing, Mr. Morgan.
Let me go!
Lonnie, no!
Frank had just pulled Goldie's reins loose from the rail. When Lonnie burst through the cantina's door, jerking away from Jeff, who was trying to hold him back, Frank saw the gun in the young cowboy's hand as he crouched and turned and dropped the reins. The bullet missed, whipping past Frank. Lonnie was trying to bring the revolver down from being kicked up by the recoil of the missed shot. Frank's gun was already in his hand again. Frank's slug punched Lonnie in his chest and knocked him backward into the arms of a shocked Jeff, who caught him and held him up.
Oh, God!
Lonnie shook, and blood trickled from the corners of his mouth. The gun slipped out of his grip, hung for a second with one finger in the trigger guard, and then fell to the ground at his feet. His eyes rolled up in his head, and he went limp. He would have fallen if not for Jeff supporting him.
You killed him! He didn't have to kill him!
That's where you're wrong, kid. If you're dumb enough to throw down on the Drifter, somebody's gonna die. And chances are it's not gonna be an old curly wolf like Frank Morgan.
Figuring that it would be easier and simpler to deal with the authorities now rather than make them hunt him down later to question him about the shooting, Frank waited at the cantina for the law to show up. They were standing outside the cantina by the hitch rail, along with a considerable crowd that had gathered in response to the shots. People stood around watching solemnly as Jeff sat in the doorway with the dead Lonnie's head cradled in his lap. Jeff looked grief-stricken, but he wasn't making any move to try to avenge his friend's death.
I'll testify that you acted in self-defense, Mr. Morgan.
So will I, Signor.
A short time later, a couple of blue-uniformed men drove up in a wagon. Los Angeles had a regular police department like the big cities back east, rather than a city marshal and deputies like most frontier communities. The officers climbed down from the wagon.
What happened here?
That young fellow there with a bullet in his chest tried to kill this gentleman. As you can see, that was a mistake.
See, he followed Signor Morgan outside and started shooting.
Morgan? That wouldn't be Frank Morgan, would it?
It would. We know each other, friend.
Well, no, we never met, but I was in Cheyenne some years back when three men braced you in the gold room. All three of them hit the floor within a couple of seconds of each other, as I recollect. You plugged each of them dead center.
With three against one odds, there wasn't time to get fancy. I just aimed for the biggest targets.
And hit them?
Damn it, Randolph. You almost sound like you admire this gunslinger. I've heard of Frank Morgan. He's nothing but a cheap hired killer.
That shows what you know. You moved here from Philadelphia. You don't know anything about the West except what you read in Leslie's Illustrated Weekly. Glad to actually meet you, Mr. Morgan. I'm Ben Randolph.
Glad to meet you too, Ben. Is there going to be trouble about this?
I wouldn't think so. What with these two other fellas testifying that you shot back in self-defense.
Blast it!
Don't mind him. I'll fill out the report. You may be called to the inquest, but as long as we know where to find you, that'll be fine.
I'll probably be staying at the Nato Hotel.
You know how long you'll be in town?
I'm afraid not. A few days at least, I reckon.
Well, that ought to be all right. I'll talk to Chief Glass myself and let him know the situation.
I'm much obliged.
Kid gloves.
What was that?
Nothing.
Could you two please tell me what happened again?
Randolph took a notebook and a pencil from his pocket and began writing in it as Barclay and Pedro retold the story. While that was going on, Frank walked over to the doorway and hunkered on his heels next to Jeff and Lonnie.
I'm sorry about what happened. You know, I didn't want to kill him.
I tried to hold him back, but he was so mad, I just couldn't stop him. Still, couldn't you have, I don't know, winged him or something?
Maybe. Maybe I would have missed, and his next shot would have killed me or some innocent person walking by on the street. I said I was sorry, and I meant it. But when you start throwing lead around, you gotta figure that somebody's liable to throw it back at you.
Jeff didn't say anything in reply to that, but his eyes burned with anger. Frank went back over to where Randolph had finished talking to Barclay and Pedro.
I reckon I've got all the information I need, at least for now. You're free to go, Mr. Morgan.
Thanks. Can you tell me how to get to the hotel?
The Nadeau, you said?
That's right. I guess it's been built since I was here last. I recall the Bella Union and the Lafayette hotels, but not the Nadeau. Say, it's not named for old Remy Nadeau, is it?
Well, it's more the name for him. Remy sold his mule teams a dozen years ago and decided to go into the hotel business with the profits. The Nadeau is the biggest and best hotel in the city. Four stories. It even has an elevator.
Well, I'll have to take a look at that, all right. I'm much obliged, officer.
Oh, you're welcome. You take care now, Mr. Morgan.
Having a representative of the law treat him so pleasantly was a nice change, Frank reflected, as he mounted up and rode toward downtown Los Angeles on Goldie, still leading Stormy and the pack horse. Wolf padded alongside. Wolf didn't like crowds. The Nadeau was so big that it occupied an entire city block. A concrete sidewalk ran all the way around it. Frank didn't know much about architecture, so he didn't know what to call the style in which the hotel was built. To him, it was just a big, ugly brick box. He left the three horses at a stable across from the hotel's rear entrance. The hostler agreed to let Wolf stay there, too, while Frank went into the hotel, but he wasn't too happy about it.
Well, that critter looks more like a wolf than a dog to me. He's not going to attack any of the horses or my customers, is he?
Not unless I tell him to, and I don't plan to do that. Here's a $10 gold piece. I may be staying here for a while, so consider that just a starter.
Thanks. We'll take good care of your horses, mister.
And the dog.
Yes, sir, and the dog, too.
Satisfied for the moment, Frank crossed the street, which here in downtown was paved with cobblestones. Instead of going in through the hotel's rear entrance, he walked all the way around to the front. That put him closer to the desk, so he could ask for John J. Stafford's room. The Nadeau's lobby was full of potted palms, crystal chandeliers, polished hardwood floors, overstuffed furniture, and people coming and going. The men wore suits and looked stuffy and prosperous. The women were mostly pretty and sported big hats, bustles, and flowery flowing dresses. With his rough, dusty trail garb, old Stetson, and well-used .45, Frank felt a little like a turd in the middle of a plate of cookies. Judging by the sneer on the desk clerk's face, he felt the same way about Frank.
Yes, can I help you?
I'm looking for Mr. Stafford.
Which Mr. Stafford?
John Jay. You have more than one staying here?
Mr. Stafford isn't in his room at the present time. Would you like to leave a message for him?
You happen to know where he is?
Even if I did, I wouldn't be at liberty to divulge Mr. Stafford's whereabouts to a person of your...
Just tell me where to find Stafford.
Did I hear my name?
Frank turned and saw a tall, blocky man with thinning brown hair and prominent side whiskers, wearing a gray tweed suit and a bowler hat.
My God, sir. You must be Frank Morgan. Claudius wired me that you were coming. It's good to meet you. I'm John J. Stafford.
Pleased to meet you.
I was just on my way into the hotel's barroom to have a drink. I've been out visiting my clients, and it's a rather dusty buggy ride back into town. Would you care to join me?
I'll pass on the drink, but I wouldn't mind a cup of coffee.
I'm sure that can be arranged. Come along, Mr. Morgan.
The two of them walked across the lobby to an arched doorway that led into the barroom. Stafford signaled to the bartender for a drink.
I'd like to get a cup of coffee for my friend here, too, George.
Sure thing, Mr. Stafford.
Stafford led Frank to an empty table in a corner of the well-appointed room.
Did you have any trouble on the way here?
Nothing I couldn't handle.
Well, I hope that you can help me handle the trouble that I've run into here. I wasn't sure about bringing in,
A gunfighter? I don't know what Turnbuckle told you, Mr. Stafford. But I'm not a hired gun, if that's what you're thinking.
Not at all, not at all. But it's true, Claudius convinced me that you might be able to give me a hand with this case, Mr. Morgan.
I'm not a lawyer either. Not even close.
I'm aware of that. But you are a man who knows what to do when all hell breaks loose, aren't you, Mr. Morgan?
Yeah, I reckon that's true.
Did you come into the city from the north?
On horseback.
Then you must have seen all the oil derricks in the San Fernando Valley as you rode through it, as well as here in town.
I did. I heard folks had started drilling for oil around here, but I didn't expect to see derricks all over like that.
Those oil wells, Mr. Morgan, are the gateways to that very hell I was talking about.
I'm afraid you're going to have to explain that, Mr. Stafford.
That explanation was delayed for a moment, as the bartender arrived with a cup of coffee for Frank, a drink for Stafford, and a glass of water. Evidently, the man already knew what Stafford's poison was, because he hadn't asked.
Thank you, George. Nothing like some fine cognac to make a man glad that he's alive. People have been drilling for oil in the San Fernando Valley on a limited basis for nearly 20 years now. They've been fairly successful, but there was never really a boom until a few years ago, when a driller named Lyman Stewart sank a well that produced 1,500 barrels a day. That started a boom in the valley. It spread here to the city when a couple of prospectors named Dehaney and Canfield dug a well with picks and shovels and wound up tapping into an even larger oil field. My clients aren't here in the city, though. The boom here is Los Angeles's problem.
What I'm concerned with is happening up in the valley.
Who are your clients?
Our firm represents several of the prominent ranching families in the San Fernando Valley. Some of them, such as the Monteros, established ranches there long before California was even part of the United States.
Ah, the Californios. That's the term by which the old families refer to themselves, right? I believe many of them had settled here while Spain still controlled the area, even before Mexico had broken free from its European parent.
Exactly.
Why do they have lawyers from San Francisco instead of Los Angeles?
Because the Monteros ranch has been here since Los Angeles was little more than a wide place in the road. When they needed assistance with legal matters, they had to go to San Francisco to find it. Francisco Montero retained the firm of Turnbuckle and Stafford more than 20 years ago, and we've always provided him with good service.
So you're working for the ranchers in the valley doing what?
They're being crowded. Oil wildcatters are moving in all around them, and in some cases actually on their range. The drilling disrupts ranch activities. The excess oil seeps into streams and ponds, and some of the ranchers have even lost cattle.
Rustling?
The drillers have to eat. According to the ranchers, they regard the local herds as a source of free beef.
I suppose a cow might get butchered every now and then like that, but it doesn't seem to me like a setup for widespread rustling.
It's becoming more prevalent all the time. And the problem is actually worse than that. Some of the riders for the various ranches have been ambushed. Several men have been wounded. And my clients are convinced that it's only a matter of time until someone is killed. So am I.
You're sure the drillers are behind the trouble?
There have been several out-and-out brawls between the two sides, followed by shootings the next day. No other explanation makes sense.
I guess not. What have you advised your clients to do?
Actually, I've been urging them to get into the oil business themselves. Beat the wildcatters at their own game, if you will. They're very resistant to the idea, though. I was out at the Montero Ranch today, talking to Dolores Montero. And when I suggested again that she consider drilling, I thought for a moment she was going to have me thrown off the place.
I thought you said a fella named Francisco Montero owned that ranch.
He did, until he passed away last year. Senora Montero is his widow. She runs the ranch now. And since it's the largest one in the valley, she carries a lot of influence with the other cattlemen, too. If I could get her to go along with the idea... But I don't think that's going to happen. She's too set in her ways.
What is it you want me to do?
I need proof that the drillers are rustling cattle and ambushing the riders who work on the ranches. The Montero spread would be a good place to start, since the bulk of the trouble has been there.
And you want me to get that proof?
I need an experienced man who can handle himself. I've spent my career in offices and courtrooms. I can't go gallivanting around the range on horseback. And when it comes to handling a gun, well, let's just say that I'm no Frank Morgan.
So what you want for me to be is a sort of range detective for you.
Exactly.
And if I can find that proof you're looking for, what will you do with it?
The local law hasn't given me a bit of help with this matter. I suspect that the county sheriff and the chief of police may be in the pay of the oil speculators. If they're not actually being paid off, they're at least being influenced by the wealth of the men involved.
Seems to me like those big ranchers would have some influence, too.
In the past, yes. But the amount of money that oil might produce for the area in the long run is astronomical compared to the value of the ranches. The city fathers know that, and so do the local lawmen. At any rate, I need some evidence that the law can't ignore, and I'm counting on you to obtain it for me, Mr. Morgan. If you can do that, I'll take the proof to the authorities, and they'll be forced to take action against the drillers.
All right. I'll see what I can do.
Excellent. Now, about your fee...
Whoa there, Counselor. Nobody said anything about a fee.
But you've come all this way, and you've agreed to take on a job that may well prove to be dangerous. Surely you deserve some sort of recompense for that.
I agreed to come down here as a favor to Turnbuckle. That's why I'm taking on the job, too. But like I told you, I'm not a hired gun.
But... Well, very well. But the least you can do is allow me to take care of your expenses while you're here. I have a room reserved for you here in the hotel, and I'll pay for it along with all your meals and supplies and whatever else you need.
Now that offer, I'll take you up on, Counselor.
If you don't mind my asking, how are you going to proceed with your investigation?
It's too late in the day to do anything until tomorrow. Thought I'd take a ride out to the Montero spread and have a look around. I reckon you can tell me how to get there.
Of course. In fact, I have a map of the valley that I'll give you. It has the location of the Montero Ranch and all the other ranches marked on it.
Sounds like it'll come in handy, all right.
If you like, I can ride out with you and tell Senora Montero why you're here.
Might be better not to. Have you told anybody that I was on my way down here?
No, I don't believe I have.
Let's leave it that way. Might be easier to find out what I need to know if nobody knows I'm looking for it.
Yes, I see what you mean. You prefer to remain incognito. That means...
I know what that means.
Yes, of course. I meant no offense, I assure you. I have to tell you, Mr. Morgan, I feel much better now. I'm confident that you'll get to the bottom of this and help me put a stop to all the lawless behavior that's been going on around here.
We'll see.
Stafford insisted on having dinner with Frank in the Nadeau Hotel's excellent dining room. That was all right with Frank, who used the time to have the lawyer fill him in on the other ranchers in the San Fernando Valley who were having trouble with the oil drillers.
I told you the Montero Ranch is the largest and most successful. Next would be Jorge Sandoval's ranch. The Sandovals have been in the valley almost as long as the Montero family. And then there's old Edwin Northam's place. He was an English sailor who jumped ship in San Pedro back in the 1850s, made his way to the San Fernando Valley, and wound up owning a ranch here. Those are the three biggest ranchers in the valley. But my clients also include Ben Patterson, Dave Guthrie, Augusto Lopez, and Jaime Castillo. All of them have fairly successful spreads, but not on the same level as the Montero, Sandoval, and Northam ranches.
And they've all had trouble with the drillers?
To one extent or another. No one has lost as much stock as Senora Montero, but some of those smaller ranches don't have as much stock to lose. And their riders have all clashed with the oil men here in town. This is where both sides come to drink, so you can well imagine that there have been some confrontations.
Stafford pushed aside the plates he and Frank had emptied and unrolled the map to point out the locations of the various ranches. Frank had ridden through the San Fernando Valley earlier in the day and made a mental note of the landmarks, as he was in the habit of doing, so he had a pretty good idea where all the places on the map were. Frank glanced around the dining room.
See anybody here from either side?
You mean someone who works for the drillers or the ranchers?
That's right.
No one that I recognize.
Let's keep it that way. In fact, now that dinner's over, it'd probably be best if we went our separate ways and kept some distance between us.
Ah, you don't want people to know about the connection between us.
That's right. Tell the clerk at the desk that I'll pick up my key in a little while. I'm gonna check on my horses before I turn in.
And you'll ride out to the Montero Ranch tomorrow?
That's the plan. I might even ask Senora Montero for a job.
Oh, that's a fine idea. I hadn't even thought of that. That way you'd have a reason to be in the valley without anyone knowing why you're really here.
I'll see you later, Counselor. But probably not until I have something solid to report.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Morgan. I pride myself on being a pretty good lawyer, but I'm afraid I'd about reached the extent of my abilities with this case.
Frank nodded, tipped a finger to the brim of his hat, and walked out of the dining room. Instead of leaving the hotel through the front entrance and walking all the way around it this time, he followed a hallway toward the rear of the building and stepped out into the warm Southern California night through a door back there. A lantern burned in the livery stable across the street where he had left Wolf and the horses, but the light had been turned low. Frank started toward it, crossing the street, which was empty of traffic now that night had fallen. Frank was halfway to the stable when the hairs on the back of his neck suddenly prickled. Following his instincts, Frank darted to the left, at the same time reaching for his gun. Colt Flame bloomed in the darkness to his right at the corner of the stable. His revolver was already in his hand. Frank dived forward, rolled, and came up running. The bushwhacker fired again, but the shot went well wide of Frank. Frank lunged toward the stable door. The door was open a couple of feet. Barely slowing, Frank kicked it open more. He dashed into the wide aisle that ran down the center of the big bulging cavern of a barn. Wolf stood in that aisle, fangs bared in a snarl, and the shaggy fur on his back standing up.
Outside, Wolf! Hut!
Frank continued running toward the stable's back door. Wolf disappeared out the front, moving fast and low to the ground. As Frank shouldered through the back door and turned toward the corner of the barn, he realized that his plan of trapping the bushwhacker was spoiled. The gunman burst out of the alley on horseback, leaning low in the saddle and spraying bullets all around him. Frank hit the dirt again as slugs whined over his head. In this bad light, aiming at a swiftly moving target, it would have been pure blind luck if he'd hit anything. The bushwhacker never slowed down. Wolf ran past Frank, giving chase. As fast as the big cur was, though, he couldn't keep up with a galloping horse. Wolf gave up the pursuit reluctantly. Frank stood up and dusted himself off, beating his Stetson against his trouser legs. Light from the lantern in the stable spilled out through the open back door. Frank turned and studied his clothes in its glow. Luck had been with him tonight. He hadn't been hit by any of the bushwhacker's shots, and he hadn't landed in any horse shit when he went diving to the ground those two times. Frank went back into the livery stable. The elderly hostler he had talked to earlier peered out through a narrow gap around the office door.
Is the shooting over?
It appears to be.
Are you hurt, mister?
No. Whoever that hombre was, he wasn't a very good shot. Not good enough, anyway.
Whew. You don't know who was shooting at you?
Nope. All I know is that he wasn't an amigo of mine. Not a very good one, anyway.
Well, I don't like a bunch of shooting around my place.
I don't care much for it myself.
Frank turned toward the stalls. He wanted to make sure nobody had bothered his horses. Both the gray stallion and the golden-hued one were fine, as was the pack horse. Frank had already seen Wolf in action, so he knew the big cur was fine. When he was satisfied that no one had tried to hurt his animals, Frank turned back to the hostler and flipped a coin to the man.
I didn't think any of the bullets flying around hit the barn, but that ought to cover the damage if you find any.
Thanks, mister. I'm much obliged. You're going to stay here, ain't you, until a law shows up? Somebody must have reported those shots.
Yeah, I'll wait.
Just as the elderly hostler predicted, several blue-uniformed officers trotted up a few minutes later, already with guns in their hands. Frank had told the old-timer to turn up the wick and the lantern, so there was plenty of light in the barn. He didn't want the officers to get trigger-happy and start shooting at shadows.
What the hell happened here? We got reports that a war had broken out.
Another bear flag rebellion?
When that just brought scowls from the officers, Frank went on to explain that he had been crossing the street between the hotel and the livery barn when someone started shooting at him from the alley.
You hurt?
No, the shots missed.
And I reckon you shot back at whoever it was.
Well, seemed like the thing to do at the time.
Sounds like a robbery attempt to me. The gunman probably planned on killing you, then looting whatever he could from the corpse before help got here. Although it doesn't seem to me like he chose his victim very well. No offense, mister, but you don't strike me as a rich man.
Just a drifter.
When the police were gone, the hostler looked at Frank.
They got it wrong all the way around, didn't they, mister?
What do you mean?
That policeman figured you for a saddle tramp, but you ain't. Those two stallions you brought in are fine horses, and your gear ain't fancy, but it's good quality. And you're staying at the Nado, which that fella didn't even think to ask you, so I'd say you got considerably more than two nickels to rub together.
You're an observant man, amigo.
Now, that ain't all he got wrong. If in that bushwhacker was just out to rob you, he wouldn't have kept firing once his first shots missed and you started throwing lead back at him. He'd have took off for the tall and uncut. No, sir, he didn't want your money. He wanted you dead.
He lit a shuck after a minute.
Only after you got into the barn and he figured out you was trying to cut off his escape route. Smart fella cutting his losses that way.
Whatever you say, old-timer.
I say I seen you before, a good while ago. In Tascosa, maybe? Ever been there?
I have.
You didn't tell me your name, but a fella who looked a mite like you cleaned out a saloon in Tascosa, 15, maybe 16 years ago. Sound familiar?
That's too long ago for me to remember.
Whatever you say, Mr. Morgan.
Frank slipped him another coin. The hostler closed his bony hand around it.
How about let's just keep that part quiet?
I seem to have forgot all about Tascosa. The mind plays funny tricks on a fella when he gets to be my age.
I'm obliged.
Frank left the stable and went back across the street to the hotel. John J. Stafford was waiting in the lobby for him. The lawyer hurried over when he saw Frank.
I heard some shooting a little while ago, and there's a rumor going around the hotel that someone was killed at the livery stable behind the hotel.
Nobody was killed.
But it did have something to do with you.
Just a robbery attempt that didn't work out for the hombre who tried it. Did you give anybody in the hotel my name when you reserved that room for me?
No, I just had them hold it and charge it to my account.
Let's keep it that way. The fewer people who know who I am, the better.
I understand.
Frank had Stafford claim the room key for him, then headed upstairs to get some shut-eye. He looked at the elevator as he passed it, the first one in Los Angeles, according to what he'd heard about the Nadeau Hotel, and decided that he wasn't comfortable getting into a little barred cage that moved up and down between floors. He took the stairs instead.
Huh. Definitely old enough to get set in my ways.
Frank was up early the next morning, practically before anyone else was stirring in the hotel. He had explained his plans to Stafford the night before, so he didn't see any need to wait and talk to the lawyer again. Instead, he went out through the Nadeau's rear entrance again and crossed the street to the livery stable. Nobody shot at him this time. That was a definite improvement. A different hostler was on duty at the livery stable this morning, not quite as old, but almost as gnarled as the man who'd been there the night before. He was sleepy-eyed and indifferent, not seeming to care who Frank was. Frank saddled Stormy himself, as he usually did. Most of the time on the journey down here from Nevada, he had ridden Goldie, so the big gray stallion was fresher. Stormy was ready to hit the trail, too, as he proved by frisking like a colt as Frank rode him out of the stable, with Wolf trailing behind them. In the gray light of dawn, the oil derricks sticking up all over the city looked like a bizarre forest of some sort. They rose 50 or 60 feet in the air, four-sided, broad-based structures that tapered to a more slender shape at the top. The derrick sides, with all their cross braces, reminded Frank of the way railroad trestles were built. He also rode past large, round wooden tanks where the oil pumped from the ground was stored. At this hour, the streets were quiet as far as pedestrians and horse and wagon traffic were concerned, but the air was full of noise from the donkey engines that powered the drills and the walking beams that rose and fell. Smoky lanterns provided light for the men to see what they were doing. They worked around the clock in their quest for the black gold that flowed up out of the earth. The flaring lights and the stench of sulfur in the air made Frank feel a little like he was riding through the outskirts of hell. He was glad when the road he was following angled up the slopes of the Santa Monica Mountains, and he was able to rise above the clamor and the stink. The sun was up by the time Frank made his way over the mountains and started down into the broad San Fernando Valley. Some of the valley had been converted into farmland, but this was still prime ranching country, as it had been for most of the past two centuries. Now that Frank knew what to look for, though, he saw that there were even more oil derricks here than he had realized when he rode through the area the day before. They weren't as thick as they were in Los Angeles itself, but he could see dozens of them from where he was. As he neared the base of the mountains, he saw a wagon coming toward him, being pulled by a team of mules. 10 men were in the wagon, he noted, 2 in the driver's seat, and 8 riding in the back. The overalls they wore were heavily stained, and their hands and faces were smudged with black, too. Frank moved Stormy to the side of the road to let the vehicle pass. But instead of driving on, the man handling the reins hauled back on them and brought the mules to a stop and glared at Frank.
Look, fellas, one of those damn cowboys.
Morning, boys. Heading into town?
No, don't tell them anything. You know you can't trust any of those cow-stinking bastards.
I reckon you're not from these parts, mister. And by these parts, I mean west of the Mississippi. So I'm not gonna take offense at those careless words of yours.
I don't give a damn if you take offense or not. Who do you ride for? That Mexican bitch?
I think I'd better just mosey on where I'm headed.
Hold it!
Better take it easy, Hatch. You know what Mr. Magnuson said about not starting any trouble.
I'm not starting any trouble. It's those damn cowboys who caused all the problems.
For what it's worth, friend, I don't ride for any of the spreads in the valley. I'm just passing through.
Hatch put one grease-coated hand on the wagon seat and vaulted down from it. He was a big man, tall and broad through the shoulders, with blocky fists almost as big as hams. Frank saw that he wore laced-up work boots, and from the looks of the big bruiser, he had probably done some stomping with them in the past. He advanced on Frank now.
Get down off that horse, you son of a bitch! I'm gonna teach you a lesson! The days of you cowboys riding roughshod over everybody else are over!
Better tell that dog of yours to behave himself, mister.
or we won't be responsible for what happens.
Frank glanced at the man and saw that he had produced a pistol from somewhere inside the greasy coveralls. That angered Frank even more. He didn't like anybody pulling an iron on him or on Wolf.
Sit, Wolf. Stay.
Wolf didn't like it, but he obeyed the commands. Frank swung down from the saddle and let Stormy's reins dangle to the ground, knowing that the big stallion wouldn't go anywhere. As Hatch stood there with a smug grin on his dirty face, Frank reached down and untied the thong that held his holster to his thigh. Then he unbuckled his gun belt, coiled it, and hung it on the saddle horn. He took off his Stetson and set it on top of the gun belt.
Mister, are you sure you know what you're doing?
I reckon I do. I'm about to quiet down a loudmouth bully.
I'm gonna enjoy this.
Hatch, you better not kill him. You know how upset Mr. Magnuson will be if you do.
Oh, I won't kill him, but I'll make the shit-stomping son of a bitch wish he was dead.
Frank weaved to the side so that the fist shot harmlessly past his head. Missing like that threw Hatch off balance. The driller stumbled forward a step. That brought him within range of the hard left that Frank hooked to his stomach. Hatch didn't seem bothered by it. He tried to wrap his arms around Frank. Knowing that he couldn't afford to get caught in a bear hug from the bigger, heavier man, Frank twisted away, jabbing a right into the middle of Hatch's face as he did so. Frank drove another left into the driller's belly, again with no noticeable results. Hatch waded in, swinging wide, looping punches that Frank avoided without much trouble. Frank continued to pepper Hatch's face with short, sharp punches. Blood began to leak from Hatch's nose, mixing with the oil smudges on his face and making a mess.
Stand still, damn you!
Hatch changed his tactics, surprising Frank. He feinted with a left and then shot out a straight right that caught Frank in the chest. Hatch tried to capitalize on that momentary advantage. Again, his arms reached out to draw Frank into a bone-crushing hug. Frank had the presence of mind to duck under the arms. He grabbed Hatch's right arm and threw his hip into the man in a wrestling move that an Indian had taught him years earlier. Hatch found himself flying through the air. Hatch rolled over, pushed himself to his hands and knees, and then lurched back onto his feet.
I was just gonna teach you a lesson, cowboy. But now I'm gonna squeeze the life out of you.
Hatch, no!
Shut up, Rattigan! This ain't your fight!
Hatch came at Frank again, slugging wildly once more. Frank parried and dodged most of the blows. One of them clipped him on the side of the head and made the world spin crazily for a second. Frank didn't have time to dodge to either side, so he dropped instead, falling to one knee. Then, as Hatch lurched toward him, Frank powered forward, burying his head and shoulder in the driller's belly. Frank kept his legs driving ahead. He wrapped his arms around Hatch's thighs and lifted. And once again, Hatch left the ground and came crashing down on his back. Frank didn't give him a chance to recover this time. Instead, he landed on top of Hatch, planted a knee in his belly, and smashed a right and then a left into the man's jaw. Hatch shuddered once and then lay still, out cold for the moment. Frank pushed himself to his feet. He turned toward the wagon and saw the other drillers staring at him in amazement. It was possible they had never seen Hatch defeated before.
Am I gonna have trouble with any of the rest of you hombres?
Damn it, that's enough. I'm still in charge of this crew, and I'm telling all of you to sit down.
But he knocked Hatch out.
Then I'd say he's earned the right to go on about his business in peace. Besides, Mr. Magnuson gave us clear orders when we went off shift. We were supposed to stay out of trouble. I don't know about the rest of you, but all I'm interested in right now is cleaning up, getting some sleep, and then maybe a drink or two to wash down a good meal.
I got to admit, that sounds pretty good. But what do we do with Hatch?
Some of you get down and throw him in a wagon. I imagine he'll come too by the time we get over the mountains.
While the drillers were picking up Hatch's limp form and loading it into the wagon, Frank got a rag from his saddlebags and wiped his hands and face as clean as he could. They had gotten smeared with oil while he was grappling with Hatch. There was nothing he could do about the stains on his clothes. He hoped there was a Chinese laundry in Los Angeles that could get them out.
Worried because you got a little oil on you, mister? It won't kill you, you know.
I'm not worried about that at all. If I was you, I'd be more worried about my friend going around looking for trouble.
We haven't had to look for it. keeps coming to us. I suppose it will, as long as you damn cowboys keep taking pot shots at us and destroying our rigs.
I hadn't heard anything about that.
Then you must not have been paying attention. You got hatch loaded back there?
Yeah. Looks like he's starting to come around a little.
Good. I was afraid for a minute there that this cowboy had killed him.
Hatch will have a headache, but he ought to be all right when he wakes up.
Don't act like you care, mister. We know you don't give a damn about any of us drillers. You'd just as soon see all of us dead.
Frank didn't feel like arguing. He buckled on his gun belt and stood at the side of the road beside Stormy and Wolf as Rattigan slashed at the rumps of his team with the wagon's reins. Grudgingly, the mules leaned into their harness and the wagon lurched into motion. All the drillers glared at Frank as the wagon rolled past him. Frank returned a cool, steady stare and didn't mount up until the vehicle was a good 50 yards up the road toward the mountains. He hadn't seen a rifle in the wagon, and he was well out of range now of the only handgun he'd seen.
Those fellas were sure on the prod.